Podcast vom Kunstraum Niederösterreich.
Hi there, we are back with another, our final podcast episode in 2025. You'll hear a recording of the artist talk, which I've had the pleasure to host on December 6th, together with Stina Force, this year's winner of the Hartreizen Lower Austria Prize for Performance. Stina Force is a performance artist, drummer, and choreographer. With a taste for the absurd and the strange, she creates and performs solo works that move between dance, theatre, music, and experimental performance. Stina was invited to the Luxembourg Pavilion at the Venice Biennial and also participated in the Austrian Pavilion at the Guangzhou Biennial in South Korea. Her work has been presented internationally at Transquartier, Wien, Wiener Festwochen, Brut Wien, Stück Löwen and Campo, among many others. Stina studied choreography at SNDO, School for New Dance Development in Amsterdam, and also studied at the Royal Swedish Ballet. In the framework of her project Answer Me Pythia, for which Stina was awarded the Hartreizen Prize, she transformed Kunstraum Niederösterreich into a site of prophecy, more precisely into the Temple of Apollo. Each day, over the course of 2 weeks, Stina was present on site, summoning the Pythia, which was the name given to the reigning priestess, the Oracle of Delphi, at the fabled Temple of Apollo. Like at the ancient site, Kunstraum visitors were invited to ask the Pythia one single question. And rather than giving clear answers, the Pythia, channeled by Stina, answered in riddles, confronting us with our own insecurities, our growing tendency to accept quick and convenient answers. With the help of two ventriloquist dummies, the artist made doubt and curiosity, humor, spontaneity, and wonder her main tools in facing the future. But listen for yourselves. Enjoy the talk and see you back in 2026. Thank you, everyone. Thank you, dear Stina. We're just now. Thank you for coming. And maybe we start with how are you? I mean, this was now a very quick transition. But,
yeah.
How are you landing here on your final day in the temple?
I kind of feel like this became my living room, so I feel at ease, actually. A bit hallucinatory, because I've been very active. Yeah, I've been seeing a lot of faces. I had a lot of encounters but yeah, I'm also like sad it comes to an end in a way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like I'm getting warm. yeah.
All right. I would like to start out by asking you how you arrived at the idea of bringing the Pythia, the Oracle, the Temple, to the Kunstraum and to channel the Pythia for a full 2 weeks.
Okay, there are many, many little channels, of course. But one was that, as you could see, I started practicing ventriloquism, Bauchreden in German. So speaking without moving the lips. I work a lot with the voice in my previous works and I felt like, okay, this is quite a specific craft, a ventriloquist with a puppet. And I was maybe not so interested in the puppet at first. Somehow I thought like the aesthetic of it, I don't really like. And maybe if you look at the comedy of ventriloquism, it's not like super interesting maybe. But I was still like curious about it because I couldn't stop kind of like wanting to do it. And maybe before I did it like more as a, like you saw there, like in the beginning, I would talk to myself. So more like the inner chatter, inner conversation, just being audible without it becoming another character. So I was like reading upon ventriloquism, where does it come from, when did it start? And then I found out that it is an ancient practice, something that occurred in oracle practices, in temples, and also in seances to give voice to the dead, and also to give voice to elements in nature, like a, I don't know, a rock, plant, maybe even a mountain. So I was like, ah, this oracle, I know this story about the oracle in Delphi. I've heard it before, like in dance practices. Like I feel like it's a common exercise. You kind of are as a group, you are divided in two, and maybe you pose a question as a group and the other group dances it. I come from dance, so I feel like it's like this like exercise that you do to sort of, I don't know, oil your interpretation and be a bit playful of what you're seeing and reading when it's actually something maybe abstract going on. So that's that. And then at the same time in March, I was going to premiere a piece here in Vienna in Brut. And the theater director thought, this is not ready. And I thought, it is ready. It was ready. And then I realized, I'm quite of a messy maker. And maybe I want to be able to articulate that I want to put chaos on stage, or at least stay in chaos as long as I can. It's like, it's something I really find important for my work. And I thought, wait. There are many channels, so it will be a long speech now. And while I was doing that work, I came across the clown. So, like I said, I come from dance training, so I don't know so much about theater. Like, it's a bit of a blind spot of theater history or practices. And I met someone who is a clown and told me, no, but this is exactly what clowning is. You need to set yourself up to let other people laugh at you, or you are laughing at them, depending on which clown you're working with. And so it's a lot of play and improvisation that happens in real time. And so I thought, oh my gosh, great, a figure I can hold on to. This is my friend, the clown. And then I realized, oh yeah, the oracle is also my friend. Here's also a figure that already exists. I don't need it to become like Stina yada yada needs to do this because she's an artist, la da la da la da. No, let's just borrow the oracle. So, because the oracle, I don't know if you know the legend, it's like you go there with one question and the oracle never replies in a clear answer. It's like in riddles, it's in nonsense, it's in chaos, it's very abstract, and it's up for the person who asks the question to find the answers within themselves. So I felt like, ooh, this suits me. It gives me sort of like a, becomes like a gesture for me to work, but also to put something I find important in the space. Yeah.
In many ways, Answer Me, Pythia, so the title of your project, played with the conventions of the prize as well. So yeah. Also during the award ceremony, there was not this one polished complete premiere of a performance, but instead it was a sort of kickoff of a durational performance, which would unfold as a process and throughout those 2 weeks. And I'm curious to hear or to learn more about your experience during those 2 weeks with visitors, your interaction with visitors, because also being at the Kunstraum, being in the first district of Vienna, there are also a lot of visitors who have no background in art, let alone contemporary art, let alone performance. And so being sort of thrown into a context where there is the like process at the center stage, or like the improvisation and also spontaneity. How did visitors react and respond to you, to the setting, but also the Pythia, of course?
I mean, this is a bit what I thought, like every hour will be unique because it's different than You know, when you have a, it starts at 7 o'clock and it's ends at 8. Like, and then often I feel like we are a crowd as an audience, but here it was really like sometimes it was one person, sometimes there was a group, a trio, and such. Wait, I got distracted. Maybe I will answer the question. This is also how I found Pythia, because it's in a comic book, and here is a, you can pass it around, three images there. That's Pythia, and I saw those, and I thought, yeah, that's also me, so let's be Pythia. Yeah, so in a way, it's like the first day was day zero, and then it's been sort of like being a, it's became like a learning process for me, how to simultaneously be held by the figure of the oracle and also dive into my interest of ventriloquism. So when no one was here, I was just practicing ventriloquism. I was practicing with my puppets. I tried to find material that we could do together, sort of exploring, you know, oh, the doll is upside down, or we are mimicking a scene from Blue Velvet, or we are, I don't know, doing floor work together, or just trying to find food in language. So I was like in my own rehearsal process, but then when someone came, it was important for me that the threshold was maybe not so high, that I am just quite casual and just say like, hey, how are you? Where do you live? What are you doing? Because I didn't want it to be scary or like more curiosity, because I think that's also the game, to ask a question. It's playful to me to ask a question and to not know. So I wanted to be a bit of a mystery, like, is she playing? Is she herself? Are we just having tea? And then maybe, depending who was here, more warm-up was necessary, or maybe not. And then I would ask, like, oh, do you want to play this game? You can ask a question and I will answer. And then it would be different how we dealt with that, so.
Yeah. And can you perhaps give us a glimpse into what kind of questions people asked, and whether there was a question that really struck with you, stick with you, or a question that was your favorite question?
Yeah, I think at first I was, because it takes some time to get into it, I was like very like, you know, more in my, focusing on my skills.
How can I do this really well?
But then I realized more and more people came with serious questions and like actually had devoted themselves to want to know something. So I'm like, okay, wait, let's play this game for real. What if I play it seriously? And this was the nice moment when I had to send a birthday message to your dad. This was really I think it was the first moment when I felt like, okay, this is actually working. So I wanted to give space for this intimacy, because it's, for me, it was also such a nice moment, because it's not only about me. Like, I also got to know you a bit, got an insight in your life. And then there was also a moment when an elderly man came in and I felt like, okay, we're sort of sniffing each other. And then I'm starting to learn, like, okay, what he's done in life, and then there was like an existential question, and then I asked, like, did you feel like you found an answer? And it was a very beautiful answer, and I felt, wait, now my mouth is very tired, but my point is that I get a glimpse into the person who asks, because of course it's a mirroring game or projection of. Like, mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what I say or do, mm-hmm. And the person who asks reveals themselves to me. So I also start to feel a bit like a pervert. I don't know, but like, ooh, okay, like thrilling. Like you, mm-hmm. Yeah, you're really sharing your depths. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it was very like, how much is the fish? Or How do I care for myself when my soul feels down? Or will humanity ever grow up? Or what to eat for dinner? Birthday message to my dad. And I have saved all the questions. So, yeah.
And I'm sort of expanding on this. I was wondering, I was curious to look at this more broadly. So in a time where we are or where we're consulting ChatGPT with regards to problems or issues in our relationships or friendships or family issues, and where there's also a sort of boom of how-to guides and sort of influences giving advice, what does it actually mean to deliberately not give one clear answer, but rather to throw people back to their own critical faculties?
Yeah, I mean, do we ever have a proper answer? I mean, I think it's more to just give space that the questions are always there. And that's why I think it's fun with the Oracle to know we always wondered about ourselves and well-being and health of the one ourselves and the ones we love. And the Pythia did give one. There's one. What do you say? Like it's noted or written down. One advice that she gave, and it was not to follow advice. So I thought, okay, she's cheeky.
Also, maybe we could, again, zoom a little bit on the puppets, Sylvia and Inga, for a bit, because this conjunction of ventriloquism, but also then you're turning to puppets, and then also this sort of, let's say, multivocality that you bring on stage or into this space, how do you feel that relates also to a mode of hiding or to sort of indeed offering not one clear answer but really refraining or like sort of moving into abstraction
I think I'm interested in this like gap, like of not knowing, like alienation maybe, like that it is hard to grasp oneself or another human being. And I think with the puppet, it kind of appears, you know? Like, it's me. Like, I'm literally talking to myself. But I also lose that this is me speaking. Like, there's, like... I don't know why I took you on my lap. I'm so sick.
And then also you mentioned or you touched upon already your the way you like to interact with visitors, also small talk or getting to know the audience is a central approach of yours, of liveness. And the other day, I was really enjoyed the way you blur fiction and reality, how you move in and out of character or characters. And maybe could you elaborate a little bit on why or what draws you to breaking this barrier between the audience and the stage or the performer?
I think it's always been there. I've had a despise for performance art since I was very young. It is a drive, I would say. Now I'm just being privately Stina. I think it's also a bit where I come from. There's something about a fear of being pretentious, a fear of being arty-farty, a fear of being too heady, too hard to get, not available. To create this threshold or something. And I don't know if this is just because of the neighborhood I grew up with or my family. Sometimes I feel like it has a very big impact. My mom calls me sometimes and tells me I'm going too far with my art stuff. I should be in the Dancing with the Stars or something like that. And yeah, my friends are ridiculous. And no, and but I also had it. I remember when I started my dance studies, I was like, why are you all talking about like dead men and philosophy? I don't understand. Like, we're at the same time rolling on the floor, like vomiting, fake vomiting on each other and touching each other's, I don't know, everywhere, and it doesn't go together. So for me, it can be sometimes in the way, but I'm trying this, what I mean with this hijacking the oracle. How can I maybe also stay with it and see where it can help me? The critique somehow. Mm-hmm. But I mean, I'm also in this group, you know. Mm-hmm. I am in the scene, so I also have to accept that and not like see that I'm like outside or above this group. But it's very often I feel like I'm above the art scene, yeah, because I'm funny and no one is. No, no, joke. No, but like there is, what I'm saying is like I had this conversation with myself, but then I'm like, no, but I mean, that's also lonely. Don't go there. But okay, let's stay more interested. Let's see what we can find there. No, but I think it has more to do with playfulness and like breaking a bit the social codes or what's expected. Mm-hmm. That's why I like a lot to be, for example, in, because I do work like in this setting and then in theater and then in music setting. And it's very fun to just be aware of how we are in these rooms and play with it. I'm also part of it.
And to maybe also break with a sort of protocols of the artist talk, I was wondering if you have actually any questions at this stage. So please do feel free to ask questions.
Yeah, I was wondering,
how is your relationship to the puppet? How do you feel about it? Is it kind of
a friend, or how would you describe the
relationship? I would say it's so tempting. We're obviously lovers. Yeah, we're lovers. There's a tension for sure. So like, you know, like in a yeah, not political correct way, like I'm also her sister and her mother and friend and lover. I guess we like go in and out. We're discovering, yeah. So yeah, it bleeds, I think. Yeah. Yeah.
How long did you have to learn that ventriloquism?
So I said this to her. She's not satisfied, but I think we are doing really good. It's just been 2 weeks. 2 weeks. Yeah. I mean, she was practicing alone, just like without me, and now I've been around for 2 weeks.
I might have a question that is building on that one, because you were also mentioning already that you always platform the process, and more specifically, you actually make visible the labor that sits behind performance and body-based practices. And I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit why that is, and what it means to do that within an institutional context, also like this one.
Yeah, but maybe it has to do with this resisting of knowing everything, also to be polished and have a dense text you need to read to even have access to an experience. Because also a lot of what I'm doing is quite like, I feel like it's very, very playful in a way. So therefore I feel like to put improvisation and seeking and figuring out to be in the mode of playing is a process, I guess. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, process is continuing to search. Yeah, mm-hmm. Testing. Yeah.
I wonder if you were in the studio, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and how does it feel to be a puppet? And do you know, that do you acknowledge that you're a puppet, or how does it feel?
It feels like you have a fist straight up in your ass.
Which is true.
Yeah. Her hand is in my ass.
And are we all puppets?
Yeah, I guess a bit, no? Yeah.
Maybe we could meditate a little bit on your engagement with entertainment, your dedication also to humor, to absurdity, spontaneity, which are key in your practice.
Yeah.
And what role do these spheres, these dimensions play for you, and how do you think they are necessary for us more broadly these days?
Broadly, I don't know, but I mean, comedy has always been there, like, but I mean, for myself, I feel like, you know, comedy is also dark. A lot of comedy has a dark side to it, and I feel like for me, it's a tool to maybe also, you know, it's not only like being fun for the sake of being fun and don't want to be serious. No, it's also the opposite. I feel like it's helpful for me to maybe give space for something I feel like, oh, this is alien or foreign or strange to me, and I don't know really how to encounter it. But if comedy can maybe help to even go deeper into that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I think, or what I experience, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And,
sorry, I have a question. I was very interested in what you said about the process. Do you think that, like, intuition, it's more important than knowledge, like, learning by doing, for instance, you with the puppet, right? Like, more approaching the relationship with the puppet in a more intuitive way and more by doing instead of, like, acquiring knowledge is more important to you, or?
I mean, there are both sources, you know, like there's also, if I stay too long, just improvising, I also realize we're not really going anywhere, which is like a realm to be in, like to be in this, like we are seeking, we are bantering back and forth. But then I also feel like, maybe knowledge then is that I would print an already existing theater play and just to be able to test another dynamic that maybe is different than what I would choose. So, you know, it's like a... I like this motion in the process. You go, you need more. Yeah, but both are important.
And what were these sources that you were drawing on? So these theatre plays that you just mentioned, these dialogues.
I mean, I got some help. Alex helped me, theatre person. No, I was looking for dialogues that had like a very clear dynamic of one is dominant and one is submissive, just to test how it could change. Yeah, because then it was clear. But I feel that's like an open door. I just feel like that's where my direction is going, to try and find text that already exists and try it with me in the puppet. Yeah. But the process, I want to say something about process. Sure, process is there, but I'm also someone who spends a lot of time on skills. Like maybe even more, actually. Like to learn something, like to be able to do something, mm-hmm. like a trick or a voice thing or a drum drill. I'm also a drummer. For me, it's like same thing. Here's like coordination. There are other ones. Double pedal will sit here for like 3 hours. Blah, 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 blah. Like, yeah. Yeah.
I have another arty-farty question. So yes, maybe please. You want to go ahead and ask more fun questions.
Okay.
But you work with your work, you move in and out of very different contexts. You were actually also part of the Luxembourg Pavilion last year, and where you also center staged process. Of course, you also have experience with a black box context. And now we're here in a sort of, white cube institution of sorts. And I was wondering if you have any thoughts on what the advantages... She's falling asleep.
Yes.
What the advantages...
She would never.
No.
You're the nicest curator in town.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. No, but are there things you like or dislike or that work well or better in the one or the other context?
Yeah, I mean, each moment is a moment to learn and to figure it out. So it's not like I have a favorite. But yeah. I mean, also to respond to the first question, I did have a experience in the Luxembourg Pavilion where I was for 10 days. I had like a residency, so it was also very clear, like artist in residency, so I was there working. And then the traffic was obviously a bit more like constant. And that's why I also applied with this project, because I realized I really enjoy working on what I'm doing and being kind of like... cut off, what do you say, distracted? No, like interrupted. Where I actually have a visitor, where it should make sense for a moment. Or maybe it doesn't make sense for a moment, and maybe I figure out why it doesn't make sense. So it's really like I'm really learning how to do my material and share it, like in an instant. Mm-hmm. And. Because also in a way, I feel like even though if it's the black box, I'm trying to think it's a social event, or I think maybe that's why I like to break the ice a bit. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know where you have been today, you're here, like it's really like endearing, and I'm just sharing what I'm doing, and maybe I'm a people pleaser too, want everyone to have a good time. I'm trying, I don't know. No, but I feel like it's really fun, for example, because I have a solo where I play the drums and sing and sort of talk. And I really enjoy when I do this in a music festival setting, because there everyone is ready to dance. So as soon as I start playing the drums, everyone's like... and then maybe I break it and I just say something weird and everyone's confused, but as soon as I start to play again, everyone's up on their feet dancing. And if I do this in this kind of setting, everyone's back by the wall staring at me. There are drums, it's very loud, staring at me. So then for me it's like, okay, how can we move a bit together? What kind of job do I need to do so we know we can relax and, I don't know, feel our bodies, no, whatever. Mm-hmm. But, and then maybe in the music setting, how can I try and make it that it's almost impossible to go to the bar and order a beer because there's so much tension. So, you know, it's like to like borrow the tension of rooms, maybe. Mm-hmm. Switch it up. Mm-hmm. I think it's fun. Mm-hmm. And that I get from the experience of doing both.
Mm-hmm. Another dimension that also runs through lots of your projects, or like your artistic approach, perhaps more generally, is the notion of embarrassment.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I was wondering, especially when it comes to improvisation and being spontaneous, what role does being embarrassed in front of people, being, I don't know, witnessed in a moment, for you?
I think that's when we go back to the clown. So it's not about me. Because it is already existing in clowning. It's a practice to use embarrassment, to allow others to laugh at you. And when I work myself, I try to kind of find moments where I'm embarrassed over myself. I'm like, oh gosh, like, or I laugh, or I feel that nerve within me. I think it's like it creates a bit this push and pull game. Like if I am embarrassed for a moment, we come maybe a little bit closer, maybe a little bit like, ooh, what is she doing? But then maybe I have another, what do you say, ace up your sleeve, mm-hmm. and I can throw something else, mm-hmm. and it creates this like, what's going on in the room? Yeah.
And the clown and the jester, of course, they have an important function also in society. Also, I mean, especially from a more political perspective. Is that a deliberate choice in that sense for you to draw from these realms?
I think that belongs to where I come from. Yeah, it's always been there, the clown. Like my family, they're clowns. But I think it's also a class question. Like it's really like, in Sweden you talk about class a lot and everyone is working class in Sweden. I don't know how that works, but but I come from a family where it's like, it's not, we're not used to it maybe, and I think where that quality or maybe perspective comes from, yeah. Mm-hmm. Somehow I feel the clown belongs to working class, and I come from working class, so mm-hmm. I think that's why I feel like, yeah, like the oracle. Somehow I also feel like maybe it's a scam artist, and it's a bit like how I also feel, like I'm mm-hmm. a scam artist. Yeah, like, but I don't know if that has to do with imposter syndrome also. Mm. You know, like when are they all going to find out that I shouldn't be here? That I should go back to the grocery store. Oh yeah, it's true, I did. Yeah. No, but I don't know if it's a class thing, but I feel sometimes, you know, it's what I'm thinking a bit, yes.
All right. Are there any more questions? If not, thank you.
Yeah,
thank you
for having me.
Thanks so much. Thanks for coming.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you very much. So this is the final day of the Pythia, of Anthony Pythia. And we're going to go on a winter break. But we'll be back in February on the 10th with our annual program presentation. And until then, we all, the whole team, wish you great time and hopefully a lot of relaxation and, yeah, some good days off work.
Yes.
Thank you for coming.